Okay. Tun tun. All of them. Vipanan. Embarrassed in various ways. Saha. The living being. He. Certainly. Tatra tatra. Here and there. Vihaya. Giving up. Jatam.
Those who are newly born.
Varigra. Taking. Saartha. The living being searching for his own interest. Avartate. Wanders in this forest. Adyapapi. Even until now. Na. Not. Kaschit. Any of them. Atra. Here in this forest. Vira. O hero. Adhunaha.
Of the path of material life.
Param. The ultimate end. Upaiti.
Gets.
Yogam. The process of devotional service. To the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So, translation, my dear king, on the forest path of material life, first a person is bereft of his father and mother, and after their death he becomes attached to his newly born children. In this way he wanders on the path of material progress and is eventually embarrassed. Nonetheless, no one knows how to get out of this, even up to the moment of death. You can repeat, my dear king.
My dear king.
On the forest path of material life.
On the forest path of material life.
First a person is bereft.
First a person is bereft.
Of his father and mother.
Of his father and mother.
And after their death.
And after their death.
He becomes attached.
He becomes attached.
To his newly born children.
To his newly born children.
In this way he wanders.
On the path of material progress.
And is eventually embarrassed.
Nonetheless,
no one knows how to get out of this.
Even up to the moment of death.
So purport by His Divine Grace, Srila Prabhupada, Srila Prabhupada, Ki Jai. In this material world, family life is an institution of sex. Yanmai Tanadi Grahamedi Sukham Bhagavatam 7th Canto 9th Chapter Text 45. Through sex, the father and mother beget children, and the children get married and go down the same path of sexual life. After the death of the father and mother, the children get married and beget their own children. Thus, generation after generation, these things go on in the same way without anyone's attaining liberation from the embarrassment of material life. No one accepts the spiritual process of knowledge and renunciation which end in bhakti yoga. Actually, human life is meant for jnana and vairagya, knowledge and renunciation. Through these, one can attain the platform of devotional service. Unfortunately, people in this age avoid the association of liberated people, sadhu sangha, and continue in their stereotyped way of family life. Thus, they embarrass by the exchange of money and sex. So, tamstan vipanam sahi tatra tatcha vihaya jatam parigriya sartaha avartate dhyapi nakasjadatra viradhvana param upaiti yogam. So, omagana timadandasha gananjana shlakaya chakshur unmilitam yena tasmai shri gurave namaha. So, one might question, you know, why is this stress there about being detached from sex and then also being detached from the products of sex? I mean, this is seems to be quite conservative, your Hare Krishna religion. Conservative and, as they would say in the 1960s, uptight. You know, anyway, I'm not going to tell you where that comes from. So it seems to be just like very, you know, you people are just like petunias, basically, or whatever you call the man in that regard. It's just like, huh? Haven't you gotten it? I mean, what's the problem with these things? Well, the problem, all right, let's say the problem with the gross act of sex is it makes one more attached to the body. Pumsa striya mituni bhavmetum, tayoritu vidyagrantiho, atogriha ksetra sutapta vitara janashim ohalya mahamamating. I mean, even if you're talking about chakras, because in the process of yoga, we may have some yoginis here in the room, but anyway, in the process of yoga, you're supposed to raise the energy, or the kundalini, to raise it to up here, you know, or at least here. You got to have heart. I mean, sometimes in the Krishna consciousness movement, we raise it here, and then there's nothing going on here. But anyway, that's another subject matter that's not for this class. And we were talking about that the other day. Is that, you know, sometimes devotees are so intellectual that they actually abuse each other, you know, psychologically. We're not talking about physically abuse each other psychologically. That's what one thing I've seen. I mean, it's a little side note here, is that people listen to Prabhupada and see how Prabhupada was quite heavy sometimes with his disciples. Someone was telling me a story about that the other day, how heavy Prabhupada was. When the devotees forgot or deliberately didn't put in Prabhupada's title in the books, like His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami, Prabhupada Vandaracharya, the International Society for Krishna Consciousness, and they just put Bhaktivedanta Swami, Prabhupada got extremely angry and chastised the devotees. And, of course, the reason for that was that Prabhupada understood that if we were to have a movement that would remain together, in other words, whole, it was required that Prabhupada's position be institutionalized in the movement. It wasn't that Prabhupada was doing that out of false ego. So, I mean, sometimes the Prabhupada was heavy, but his heaviness was done out of pure spiritual realization and compassion and vision and strategy and all those other things like that. Whereas we find devotees, sometimes they imitate Prabhupada's mannerisms without the realization of Srila Prabhupada, and then what it does is it discourages people from Krishna consciousness. And I've seen that even on the GVC level. That, I mean, just like, I'll give you an example, one particular case. There was a sannyasi, not me, don't worry. There was a sannyasi who was going somewhere, and he was collecting money and taking it away from the zone, a particular zone. And, you know, that's really not what we want, because we have to, I mean, collecting big money, we're talking hundreds of thousands of dollars, not just like some, you know, $10, $100, even $1,000. So, therefore, there was a very heavy letter sent to him that, please, stay out of here. And he apologized, you know, he got the letter, apologized and everything like that, I'll adhere to your directions. And then, but then there was the whole concept that, you know, he's being tricky, he's actually not listening to us. You know, in other words, there's this whole concept of treating devotees like children. And of course, when you treat people like children, then you usually get one or two results. One result is they rebel, and they become tricky, and they don't do what you're saying, and they follow the letter of the law without following the spirit of the law. Or another way is they just become submissive and they become discouraged in Krishna consciousness. So anyway, but that's the heart region. So it's in any case, we don't want everybody's consciousness to be like in the lower regions of the body. And the sexual activity does that. And Prabhupada actually equated licit and illicit sex in pretty much the same category as far as bringing one's consciousness down. So anyway, so that's the physical side of it. And then the psychological side, the emotional side of it, is that the byproducts of the sex, which, I mean, anyway, I haven't spoken like this in years, so forgive me, but the verse is just about that, so what can I say? I'm not just making it up. So the byproducts, I mean, there's the children, And the children, when you see the children, I mean, it's nice. I mean, children, I like children, too. It's not that I'm one of these agitated sannyasis and say, get these little boogers out of here or anything like that. You know, I love children. But when you see them, they're just like in the splitting image of you. It's a little bit different. You know, when I see children of the nice grahasas in our movement, they're not in my image. They don't look like me, you know. The nose is certainly different, you know. So you know, I like them. Like Prabhupada loved the children, and Prabhupada treated the children very nicely, and Prabhupada even had little Saraswati come and see him. That's Malati's daughter. Well, and Prabhupada would just practically pay for her to fly to where he was. And Prabhupada loved her very much, because Prabhupada was very affectionate to the children. But one's own children, then there's a natural attachment. I'm not saying that's bad. I'm not putting a negative label on it or anything like that. It's just natural. You become attached. I mean, just like looking in the mirror, it's you, or you become attached. Or just like when I go to Facebook and someone posts a picture on my wall and it doesn't have my picture in it, even though they've tagged me in it, it gets upsetting. Isn't it? I said, you know, why are they tagging me if they don't put my picture in it? And it, you know, every time you look through pictures, just like I was just in, where was I? Oh, I was in Australia, and I wanted to see someone's wedding album, and which I did their wedding, you know, many, many years ago, like 10 years ago. And I was just looking, you know, looking through pictures for pictures of myself. Isn't it? I mean, it's natural psychology, isn't it? When you look at a wedding album that you were there, you're looking, where am I? And then I said to them, you don't have many pictures of me in here. What's wrong with this wedding album? Because there's natural attachment to the body, right? Don't we all experience that? You know, when we look at pictures of where we were, you know, we're thinking, and you know, even I go through the Vyasapuja book and see, are there any pictures of me next to Prabhupada? In other words, I'm more important. You know, this is mundane consciousness that we have, that we look for ourselves. So, therefore, I mean, the point is, with children, one naturally becomes attached because they're byproducts. I mean, they look like you or whatever. I mean, and they're your possession like that. So that's natural. I'm not saying that's bad, because if there was an attachment, then, you know, the parents wouldn't take care of the kids. Unless they were actually completely Krishna conscious, or at least in the mode of goodness. The mode of goodness, of course, one sees one underlying spiritual nature in every living entity. That's the understanding of the mode of goodness. According to Krishna, this is Bhagavad Gita, according to Krishna in the Gita. In the mode of passion, one sees different living entities, I mean different categories. Of course, we understand there are different living entities and different bodies, but just different categories. In other words, it's I and mine when you get into the mode of passion. And when the understanding in the mode of ignorance, forget about it. Never, you don't even get attached to your children. All you're attached to is just being here now. And just like drinking, enjoying the senses at the moment. And, you know, you could mistreat your children. You could beat them. You could neglect them. That's mode of ignorance. Just like you see people get drunk, sometimes they're beating their wife, they're beating their children. This is the nature of the mode of ignorance. So, but generally, when we're talking about the byproducts of sex, it's something in the mode of passion, rather than ignorance or goodness. Because goodness would be all children are equal. Or the husband would say to his wife, all ladies are equal. Because that wouldn't make for happy family life. If his wife says, do you love me? And the husband says, I love all living entities equally. And you're a living entity. And on that basis, I do love you. It really, you know, does not make for happy family life, does it? So Prabhupada said, for happy family life, even if the husband is in the mode of goodness, he has to at least, you know, cross his fingers behind his back and say that, you're special to me. But in the mode of goodness, it's not that anyone is special. I mean, the gurus, special in one sense. But, you know, you see, they're all living entities. Yastu sarvani bhutani atmane bhana pashati sarva bhuteshu chatmanam tato navigigupshate. This is the Ishopanishad. One sees all living entities equally, and he doesn't have any enemies or special friends. That's another thing. We're not even talking about family members. We're talking about special friends. Here's my special friend. Here's my enemy. Because he sees everybody as part and parcel of Krishna. They're all brothers and sisters in a spiritual sense, and they're all Krishna's children. So a devotee is actually equally affectionate to everyone. Of course, if they're involved in family life, then they have to follow the dharma of being especially affectionate to the family. Because that's, but out of dharma, it's like that. And we see Lord Ram, because he took the position of king, he was equally affectionate, perhaps even more affectionate towards the citizens than he was with his own wife and children. Because of dharma. So the whole point is dharma. You know, understanding what one's position is, what one's duty is, what one's constitutional nature is. That's the whole point. So it is important after some time to get detached from the byproducts of your body. I mean, it's very important to get detached from the byproducts of the body. So the Vedic system is really based on, the whole Varnashram system is based upon this gradual detachment. In fact, the system of gradual detachment starts, even before one gets married, it starts in brahmachari life, or brahmacharini life, as the case may be. One is trained, like Prabhupada would talk about how the children should be trained in detachment. Not harsh detachment. You know, some devotees misunderstood what that meant. And they would preach to little children that a particular lady is not your mother. I remember that in the early days of the movement, the children would come to the Gurukul, be dropped off by their parents at 5 years of age. And they'd be crying, "Mommy, mommy, mommy." And the teacher would say, "This is Maya, Maya, Maya." Because, you know, Prabhupada did say, "Ma can also mean Maya." You know, that's Prabhupada's quote. Ma, ma, Maya. So that is not the right teaching in the Gurukula. One is trained up, and their natural affection to their mother is encouraged. But they're actually trained up in a spirit of, let's say, enjoyment of renunciation. That's the point. I mean, that was the point that they missed in Gurukula. They had the renunciation, but not the enjoyment part. Prabhupada said that the children should have fun renouncing things. I mean, just like when I was young, I went to summer camp and it was very renounced. Not like Krishna conscious renunciation. But we would camp out in the woods, you know, sleep on the dirt, like vanaprastas. And sit around the campfire, eating prasadam. No, eating whatever garbage we ate. But anyway, it was very renounced. And we'd sleep in the cabins in our summer camp. We'd have, you know, bunk beds. Mm-hmm. And there would be like 20 kids in a little tiny room about that size, you know, twice the size of that. And we'd wake up early in the morning, salute the flag. It was a type of Gurukul, not exactly Gurukul, Mayakul, but still, the point was that whatever renunciation we experienced during the summer, and that was our summer vacation, was fun. It was a lot of fun. Because that's, otherwise, why would you want to go to summer camp? Unless it was fun. Fun. And we would sing, instead of a Hare Krishna mantra, we would sing the camp anthems. You know, each camp had its anthem. Did you know that? Anyone here ever go to summer camp? You did. So I went to Camp Winnipesaukee. around Lake Winnipesaukee, whatever it is, in New Hampshire, and we'd sing, we all join hands and sing, you know, "Oh, Camp Winnipesaukee." It's an Indian name, actually. And many of these camps have Indian names. And it was fun. And I remember with happiness, you know, being there, even though it was so austere. And so then later on in life, you know, I wouldn't mind camping around Govardhan because of that experience when I was young. You know, and Yeah, and canoeing and everything like that. You know, I wouldn't mind taking a canoe on the Manasaganga or something like that. So in other words, the experiences you have, the fun experiences you have with it as a child, you want to do the same things when you get older, isn't it? I mean, I did a lot of fun things when I... So I'd like to do all those things in Krishna consciousness, of course. Not in Maya, but... So that was the Gurukul training on the simplicity. Because when you get older, life is not so simple anymore. When you're young, it's very simple. I mean, I didn't worry who was paying for summer camp. It was my mother. My mother later on made sure I knew. She still does. She says, you know, I slave like anything, working two jobs to send you to summer camp. But I couldn't care less about it. It was just very nice, you know, summer camp, you know, enjoyment. And I didn't worry about paying the bills, who was cooking, who was doing the offering, because there weren't any offerings at the summer camp. Nothing. It was just like pure enjoyment. I mean, of course, there were anxieties, too, I understand. It's the material world. You know, is my friend nice to me? Or what about the girls' camp that was next to the boys' camp? You know, I mean, there were some anxieties, but it was relatively peaceful and anxiety-less. So that's actually how the children should be trained in Krishna consciousness. Not with this high-anxiety childhood, but the idea is the renunciation simplicity. See, that's the attractive feature of renunciation. You know, people say, you know, why is it attractive? Because it's simple. Just like when I go to Govardhan, I just boil some quinoa. And that's my whole meal. I'm not going to spend 4 hours making all these opulent preparations and different sweets and things like, you know, just boil some quinoa. It takes me 15 minutes. I eat it, and I chant Hare Krishna. It's nice. And in the morning, some fruit. And then, you know, once in a while, I dust out my house, you know. You know, I clean it. And I do my laundry at the same time. You know, just do the laundry, put it out in the line. Just simple, like Prabhupada talked about, dhotis. It's very simple. I mean, that's why we like dhotis, not because they're inherently spiritual, because they're very simple. I just put, you know, the last day's dhotis in the... Well, we have a machine, but it's not exactly like your automatic machines here. And you got to add the water, and it churns it up, and then you get rid of the water, and then you add more water to rinse it, isn't it? Then you have to take it to the next tub. I mean, it's practically easy to clean it in a tub. It's more work because you got to run down and fill it up and run down and drain it, and then after a while you got to put it on the line anyway. So, but anyway, life is simple and it's so blissful when life is simple. I mean, when you get older, you appreciate a simple life like that. So anyway, so if there's proper brahmachari life, then you're trained in that simple life. So later on, it's easier for you to renounce things. But if there's not proper brahmachari life, then all you're thinking about is life is complex and it stays complex till the very end. I mean, it's like a relief. Like you see, Lord Rishabhadev, who took this Jata Yoga process, you know, walking around naked, it was simple. Even though people spit on him, he didn't have to worry about it, cleaning it up. Washing his clothes. I mean, that was the whole point. To minimize eating, sleeping, mating, and defending. That's the whole point of renunciation. Because it takes so much time. You know, this eating business, you know. So much time and sleeping, so much time and mating, and then defending your false ego. So therefore, that's why the brahmachari training is there. One just remembers, wow, I had a good time when I was young, and now I'm worried about how much money's in the bank, the mortgages, the children are getting sick, and then the grandchildren. I mean, yeah, you have to take care of the children. But the problem comes that later on, there's not only children, there's grandchildren. And then after the grandchildren, what happens? There's great-grandchildren. And after the great-grandchildren, there's great-great-grandchildren. And after the great-great-grandchildren, there's great-great-great-grandchildren. And then there's the uncle, there's the aunt, there's the nephews. And the nephews are having their children and grandchildren. And everybody's getting married. And so you spend your whole life going to marriages. And then when you get older, you spend half your life going to funerals. Is it? So you have no time left for self-realization. It's true. I mean, you split your time between funerals and marriages and baby showers and name-giving ceremonies. And what else happens? And what?
Birthdays.
And birthdays. I mean, until you have no time left to chant rounds. So that's why in the Vedic system, and that you have this injunction about 50 years of age, you know, just head for the hills, vanaprastha. And we see that with many great souls in the Vedic system that, I mean, of course, you have Vrishabhadev, Bhart Maharaj. As soon as there was someone capable of taking care of the responsibilities, that's it. They didn't think, you know, I got to stick around and play with the great-great-great-grandchildren. I mean, Bhart Maharaj, he was married. He could have stayed around. Lord Vrishabhadev, he had 100 sons. Imagine how many grandchildren there were. Two? No, a lot more than that. I mean, there was the Navayogendras. Some of them were sannyasis, but, you know, most of them were like ritualistic brahmanas. And, of course, the Navayogendras. And so he didn't stick around because human life is meant for self-realization. Because if you just get more attached to the byproducts of this body. And Prabhupada, there's an interesting story that Prabhupada said to one of his associates. He said, you should take sannyas and join the Krishna conscious movement. And he said, I can't. And Prabhupada said, you're just too attached to sex. And the man said, well, no, I'm celibate. More or less, I mean, just paraphrasing his words. And Prabhupada said, you're attached to the byproducts. Like that. So at a certain age, one should devote all their life. And the preferable vanaprastha is not going into the forest nowadays. We don't need people going to the Eno State Park, except to chant japa or to the Poets Walk. Except to chant japa. I mean, we don't want people camping out at the Poets Walk or camping out at the Eno State Park or even at the bottom of our property. Too many mosquitoes, anyway, and other bugs. So, what is called Kshetra Sannyas. Prabhupada said that's the preferable stage of renunciation. Kshetra Sannyas means you stay in a place and you devote your life to the service of deities, a particular set of deities, like Giridhar Pandit Goswami. Of course, he was never married, but still, he was in the order of Kshetra Sannyas. He devoted himself to Tota Gopinath deity. And he was so devoted to the deity that even when he couldn't take care of the deity because he was old and the deity was quite big, the deity sat down so he could take care of him. It's pretty good. Now, we're not saying that Radha Gopinath should sit down so people could you know, people are getting old, so Radha Gopinath will step down from the altar so you can dress at a decent height, you know. No, I don't think that will happen. If it does happen, my obeisances to you, you know. Yeah, easier altar. But don't expect the deities to step down. So that's the Bhaktivinoda Thakur says that's the preferable order of renunciation. Like that. There's no need to give up everything and, you know, just give up your family completely, but to engage fully in Krishna's service and not spend all your time with the marriages and, well, the funerals you got to go to. It's good preaching at the funerals. It's called Smarshana Vairagya. People become very much renounced at the funerals. Don't spend the rest of your life doing that. Just serve the mission of His Divine Grace Srila Prabhupada. And in that way, when you're serving the mission of His Divine Grace Srila Prabhupada, and, you know, nice to your family too, but especially if one's a sannyasi, one's not supposed to go back to where they were born. Because if one goes back to where you're born, that's part of the bodily attachment. I mean, it's really a big attachment, because even when I go on Google Earth, I look for the place that I was born. You know, understand? Mm-hmm. Has anyone ever done that in Google Earth? Mm-hmm. You look for the place. I mean, it's just Boma Ejiti. Yatir the Buddhi shall he lay in a kari chit. Janeshu Abhigeshu sa eva gokura. That's what Bhagavatam says. One thinks the place of his birth is worshipable. And to go to a body of water is a sacred place. You know, you go to the beaches in North Carolina, Wilmington, is a sacred place. Then that's like the consciousness of a cow or an ass. Goes to a sacred place just to take a bath, or goes to a sacred place just to take a bath. So we don't want to have that consciousness. So especially if someone's sannyasi, there's really strict rules as far as where you can go, what you can do, who you can associate with, because sannyasa is supposed to exhibit the topmost standard of renunciation. But others can be equally renounced, at least not exhibiting the same external renunciation, but internally by dedicating themselves to Srila Prabhupada's movement. Anyway, so this is the point. So any questions or comments? Dedicating themselves to Radha Golokananda. Yeah. Never stops.
One decision that she had made, and she said, and now I'm older, and I'm still not able to take to my spiritual life. I mean, of course, I said, well, you have a lot of realization because, you know, you're seeing all this, but she was actually seeing how you make a decision that keeps growing and growing and growing and growing, and then the kids want this, and then you got to watch the grandkids.
It never ends. There's no end to it. So at one point, one just has to say enough. That's the point. At one point, you just say, take care of yourselves, you know. I mean, just like Jesus Christ, when he was preaching to someone and someone wanted to follow him, and the person was supposed to bury his father. And Jesus Christ was very heavy. He said, let the dead bury the dead. Isn't it? You remember that from the Bible? So at a certain point, one just has to say, you know, enough. I'm going to devote myself fully to Krishna, and the family take care of itself. I mean, the kids are grown up. They can take care of themselves. Of course, that's hard. You can't force people. They have to have a taste for that sort of renunciation. All right. And that, don't blame me for the verse. I mean, that was...